Mr. Holdsworth, Real Six. So, you'd read an article in The People by Helen Swaffer?
Yes. Swaffer was one of the best known investigative journalists of the day, like the Paul Foot of those days. And he'd done this expose of Plymouth Barracks, Devonport. And there'd been a big to-do, big attacks on the Admiralty and so on. So, it was... they were quite sensitive about conditions. They had this. The complaints procedure was well established, but of course very few people took advantage of it. As you had it was the old thing. They had an answer to it. Anybody that complained or didn't do anything was a lower deck lawyer. You were one of these people that were arguing and quibbling as though, you knew the King's regulations and Admiralty instructions backward and were just playing as a lawyer. That's how they used to portray it. So if you had any grievance, too bad. But he'd given them a bit of a scare and they had the procedure. No trouble there. But it was quite funny because I first did it at breakfast time. We had the normal Navy breakfast, which was two of these sausages that you could cook for days and they'd still be pallid pink with this pinky centre, completely tasteless, God knows what they made them of, and then tinned tomatoes, which, by the time it got served was just pulp. There were no tomatoes that you could see, well, you may, if you were lucky. But these, like, tinned Italian things. And so I thought, I'm sick of this, so I'll complain about this, So I went up to the officer of the day and said, I'd like to make a complaint. I think the food was atrocious. So he said, he thought it was quite reasonable, and, this is what they'd been having for years, and it seemed of reasonable quality and all that. And I said, the thing wasn't even hot. Anyway, I said I wasn't satisfied. I'd like to take it further. So I gradually worked up and finished up with Commodore S. He was the Commodore of Supplies, who was in charge of all that section. He was the end of the line, as it were, in complaints about food. And I showed him the thing. They had the chief cook there. And he sort of agreed it wasn't, very clever. So he said, give him another one, give him a proper breakfast. So I had a big plate given me with these three proper sausages, nicely brown, crisp. Three tomatoes, or was it two tomatoes, which had been grilled. An egg and a slice of fried bread. And I went back to the mess deck and they'd finished because it was quite a while, this procedure going on. But they'd hung on, to see what had happened. When I came back with this, everybody was slipping staggered, It was very funny, actually. So I thought it was a fair thing. You've got to get known. And as I said, I knew a few. And Bertie and McLaughlin, that had been my friends on the Jamaica, were in barracks at the time, as I said, and we started talking to people. This officer that said he was a bit of a bolshy, I sort of immediately challenged him and said, why haven't you signed the Five-Power Peace Pact? Which was the ludicrous thing that the Communist Party was involved in at the time, collecting signatures to demand that the Big Five sign a peace pact, because Russia was obviously frightened to death, that they were going to gang up and attack her. And it was like the Soviet-German, pact. It'd probably be as useless as the Soviet-German pact. But that was the big thing at the time, this Five-Power Peace Pact, because the Communists were really into peace. Peace was the important thing. And he sort of turned away, you know, and asked him why didn't he buy the Daily Worker and so on. And I think he was a provocateur. But I used to take everybody up. I was arguing with everybody. Bertie and McClothery, I don't know whether they supported me politically. They were a bit rebellious. I don't know whether they supported me politically or just because we were buddies, you know, or what. But they went along with it. But it wasn't, you know, I didn't last very long. And then I was arrested and put into cells.
Just before you talk about that, why did this officer claim to be a Bolshie? What was the expression he used? Did he say that?
He said he was a Bolshie.
Bolshie. That word Bolshie, when you began to get a bit of a reputation for causing them problems, making complaints and so on, Bolshie would, I imagine, be a sort of word they'd apply to anybody who's a bit of a thorn in their side.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the way you were seen by other people? Just like one of, I imagine every barracks probably had someone who was like that. Or did they see you as a bit more political than that? The other sailors rather than...
I don't know.
Would they call you Bolshie? Would they call you nicknames like that or anything?
No, I didn't come across any antagonism. That was the strange thing about it. I didn't encounter any antagonism on the lower deck. I was talking about Russia, you see. Because that was the main thing. That was the thing I knew a bit about. And so it was talking about Russia. And that the capitalists were ganging up on it. And that it was the workers and peasants that ruled there, you know. And that we ought to be ruling our country, you know. And it was State and Revolution, you know, and all that sort of. And the History of the USSR by Rothstein. So that was what I was repeating. Elsie used to send me Soviet Weekly. I don't know if you've ever read it. It's a very boring. And it was full of Vyshinsky's speeches at the United Nations. Vyshinsky was the prosecutor in the 1936 trials. Ex-Menshevik, that was a real hack. But I used to read all these bloody speeches out to these to the matlows, you know. God knows what they thought. I don't know what they thought at all. But I was trying to win support. And, of course, the sailors are a bit bolshy, you know, because they live in a class, they can see the class system, you know. They know that the officers are a different class from them. So it's like fertile ground, you know, and there's always dissatisfaction.
When I was saying about them calling you names or whatever, I meant in an affectionate way. You know, calling you Bolshie or whatever.
No, I was just saying, like, as a communist. Right. You know.
So they clearly saw you as a political
communist,
character.
Yeah.
And the officers had by this time marked you out as a bit different. Must have from the usual sort of barrack room lawyer type.
You always get the squealers. I mean, and there was people watching me as well, unknown to me, because they were reading out at the trial stuff that I'd said. You know, so some mugger must have been taking it down. But Like I said, there was quite a feeling about the trade union. They didn't know whether it was possible, whether we'd get away with it, you know. But they felt that you needed one. We could start. I mean, we wanted decent pay. We were on rotten pay. And, I mean, you'd know comeback. It was the iron rule of the officer class in the Navy. I mean, you were there at their complete beck and call. And any protest at all was mutiny. And the Articles of War, you know, you could be a death sentence.
So did you say, you're talking now about organising a union.
Mm.
How are you going about this? Did you enter into it from the point of view of having a meeting or something like that? Or were you so aware of the potential kickback that you were just discussing it?
We were discussing how to do it. We thought if we get some union cards printed in Plymouth, you see, then we could start recruiting, like people, you know, ordinarily got a union. Started recruiting and building a branch and, you know, started having meetings and that. We envisaged it going like that. But they must have got a wind of it, because I was arrested, you know, pretty near right away.
How far had you got towards thinking about what you're going to do. Did you think you'd set your own union up, or did you think of joining a union that already
No,
existed?
We were going to set one up. No, we never thought about joining them. We didn't know anything about the unions outside. We're just going to set our own up, you know.
Had you thought of a name for it?
No, no. Seaman's Union we were thinking of. As we were, I mean, Devonport was mainly the seamen, you know, and we thought seamen initially. You saw Stokers as a class apart, sort of. I mean, there was, there were layers in the Navy, sort of, as it were, on the lower deck, you know. But we just thought of a seamen's union, you know. At Plymouth, Devonport initially, you know, HMS Drake. Because we thought if we started here, it'll catch on, you know, when the others hear about it. But it didn't get a chance to catch on.
Why? What happened?
Well, I was arrested.
How did that happen?
They just came for me.
When?
During the day, I think. I'm not so sure. I can't really remember.
Did they do it in front of other people?
Oh, yeah. They just came. A couple of RPOs, regulation petty officers. That was what they called the... There was like a Master of Arms who was the head policeman, and then RPOs who were the police, you know. A couple of them came and took me and charged me and put me in cells.
What did they charge you with?
Inciting mutiny and treasonous conduct. And they said in due course I'd be court-martialed, you know. So I was in cells about 6 weeks. And...
What was that like?
Well, I wasn't bothered. They had us picking oakum at the time, but I got an allergy.
Were you kept on your own? Were you in solitary?
Yes, I was on a cell on my own. Yeah.
Would that be normal, or would that be because of
that was
you
normal?
Being tried?
That was normal. A cell of your own. They would have done it anyway. We'd been political. And when I was put in Exeter prison, I was in a cell on my own. They wouldn't even put me with anybody. They were all three in the cell, but I was the cell on my own. And I was picking oakum, and they had to stop that because I developed an allergy. I swelled up. They had to dope me for a couple of days. But I decided to protest and grow a moustache. You know, I thought, well, you're only allowed to have them. You have to get permission to grow a beard. You apply to see the captain. And the captain gives you permission, and you're on probation for a month. Then in a month, you've got to go back to the captain again, and he sees if it's a scraggly thing, you'll say, no, cut it off, you see. And if it's all right, then it's okay, you can have a beard. You've got to get permission. And I thought, I'll grow a moustache, a Joe Stalin moustache, you see. And it was quite fun. Nobody would ever look at it. Okay, I'm fair-haired, but I mean, it was quite thick, you know. I was 6 weeks growing it, and nobody passed any comment on it at all, you know, it was, except that my mates, you know, what you were growing the moustache for, so I told them, but they'd never mention it, they'd never take me up on it at all. And I used to harass them quite a lot. When the officers had this procedure, they come round the cells every night about 9 o'clock. Have you any complaints, you see? And I used to always take this up. Yes, the fascist way I'm being treated, you see. But as they were coming round on the rounds, you could hear them opening the doors and all that, I used to whistle the red flag. I didn't know the words. I didn't know the international. But I knew the tune of the red flag, so I used to whistle this. And the be quiet there, you know. I'd take no notice, and then when he'd open the door. Well, the officers would leave the wardroom, leave the pink gin there in the wardroom, and come to do this rounds expecting, only a few minutes, you know, straight round and back. But, of course, once you complained, they had to go through this procedure sort of thing. So they must have bloody dreaded coming round, you know. I used to do it every night. And I started upping the complaints thing in the cells. I mean, the warders, these RPOs that in charge of the cells, they were ripping us off something rotten. I mean, we had tea like cat's pee because they were ripping off the sugar, milk, tea. So we got real weak stuff, you know, like water. So I complained about this, said that it was disgraceful, you know, the tea we were being served. And so they were clamped down on and we started getting proper tea. Well, all those in cells were immediately supportive of me. You know, I had tremendous support in cells.
So did you ever get to speak to any of the others?
I did. During exercise.
Right, so you weren't in solitary in the
cut off from association? No, I was talking to the others. And then the other thing was, in the morning, one of the breakfasts was cornflakes and kippers. Okay? Now, we wouldn't get the bloody cornflakes. So I complained about this. Okay? So we started getting cornflakes and kippers, you know. And then the other thing was, during this smoking period, you had, I think it was 2 10-minute breaks a day, where you were allowed to smoke. But the warders, the RPOs, only allowed you to have one cigarette each time, you see. So I said, well, the regulations say that you're allowed to smoke during this period. Didn't say how many. That was their interpretation. So I went to see the Admiral about it. You know, I'd seen the Admiral about these other things.
And you've been to see the Admiral before, had you?
Over this conflicts and kippers and
So every time you made a complaint, it automatically...
I took it right up to the top.
How would that work? They'd offer you the next one up and you'd say, no, I want to go higher?
They'd say, well, I think it's satisfactory. And say, I'm not satisfied. And so you'd take it up to the top.
Did you always see the same Admiral?
Aye. Mm-hmm. On the conflicts and kippers, it was decided at an earlier stage than him. They agreed, you see. But the cigarettes, got to see him over that, and I said, you know, they're saying, it says smoking be allowed. It doesn't say how many, but they're saying we can only have one. Well, what if you want to smoke two? It's 10 minutes. So he said, that seems reasonable, you know. So it was, you know, accepted. So, well, how you got cigarettes other than the smoking period, you smoked them in your cells, but they were your dog ends, you see. So if you smoked 2 cigarettes, that was 2 dog ends you had. So that was a proper smoke. I mean, not these little thin things. So you'd 2 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, or 3 in the afternoon, you know, if you smoked them fast. So it was a real step forward. So the other prisoners could see things getting better, you know, I mean, visibly, you know. So I had quite a bit of support. One of the guys that was in was an electrician, and
before you go on with that, how do you roll up the dog
in? In toilet paper, generally. Used to just tear a bit of toilet paper or a bit of newspaper and just roll it up, lick it, you know. Used to come apart and all that, but I mean, they were that thin. You were smoking paper more than tobacco, but I mean, you were glad of what there was. But the problem was matches. You could cut them up like they did this in Exeter. Some could cut a match into about 10 pieces, you know, unbelievable, but they had thin slivers and a special delicate way of striking them. But this electrician that we had in cells said, I'll tell you how to do it. You get a piece of paper and a strip of toothpaste tube, and you twist the paper around the toothpaste tube and have the toothpaste tubes shaped in a U. Then you get a bit of cotton waste soaked in Bluebell, this polish, stick it in the U, then take the bulb out and short it, and it used to light the thing, and then you could get a light. It blew all the fuses. And they're always having electricians putting fuses in. They thought the electrics were all shot to hell, you know. But I had quite a bit. And the warders were all coming round and trying to say, you're only trying to work your ticket, aren't you? You know, you're trying to work your ticket. So I said, no, you know, I'm not. I'm trying to organise for a revolution sort of thing. And then I was seen by this guy, supposed to be from MI6. He was in plain clothes, probably from defence or something or other. And he was asking me questions about Russia and all that. And of course, I have quite a retentive memory. So I had this Russian Revolution off Pat and all this, you know, and bits of Marx and what have you, and Lenin. So he was saying, well, it's not communism in the Soviet Union, you know. So I said, well, why are the capitalists all against it then? And Joe, you know, he was attacking him. And I was saying, well, naturally you'll attack him. You know, he's for the working class. I mean, you attack everybody that's for the working class. The time that we'd be suspicious is if you were praising him, you know. So he said, it was a long interview. And at the end he said, well, he said, I shot quite a few of your people during the war. You know, Reds like you. He said, and I'd have no more compunction in shooting you. So I said, oh, it's okay. I said, we'll thin your bloody ranks out after the revolution. So he cleared off. So he must have decided, he was probably checking up to see at these orders were, whether I was trying to work my ticket. Because there were loads of regulars trying to work the ticket, you know. So that's what they probably thought. And then after about 6 weeks, I think it was, then they brought me up for the court-martial.
Just before you say that about working your ticket, would a dishonourable discharge be a real problem if you tried to get a job afterwards?
Presumably. Yeah, presumably.
But people would be prepared to do that kind of thing anyway, just to get out.
Oh, I to get out. Everybody was... I mean, they were so bloody miserable. And when you went to barracks... I mean, I was in the barrack guard, which was a soft job, before I'd been in the chief bosun store, because I could splice wire, you know, so that was a soft job. But most people had rotten jobs in Plymouth, and it was all kit inspections and all that. Well, I'd always had a kit that was reasonable. In fact, I had two kits, you see. I had one that was ready for a kit inspection, and then the other one that I used, you know, so one was all rolled up with cardboard in, so it was tight, you know. So it never bothered me that, but a lot of people had a hell of a time. You know, they really hated it, going to Plymouth. They really hated the thing. The rotten jobs that you got there. And so they were a lot trying to get out.
During the 6 weeks then, before it came up to the court-martial, now you were just being held in custody, really. You
hadn't actually been waiting trial, yeah.
So you had... certain rights, presumably, like you had the right of associating with the other prisoners and all that.
Twice a day?
Yeah. Did any of them start copying your tactics? Or did any of them start joining in your protests about the food and everything else?
No, no.
They were prepared to take the advantages.
Oh, right, yeah.
They didn't want to stick an exit. No. So were any of them trying to work their ticket?
I don't know. We never discussed anything like that. Well, I didn't discuss anything like that.
But
all I was discussing was politics.
I
don't know. I think most of them were on a charge for misdemeanours, you know.
When you did discuss politics, what did I think?
They weren't against, you know.
But on, say, something like the union, were they interested at all?
I wasn't talking about the union to them, so I was in a different situation, you know, then.
Why was that? Why?
Well, I mean, how could you get organised in cells?
Yeah, but you didn't even talk about the idea of it.
No, no, I was talking about communism. We weren't on there. I mean, it looked as though I was going to prison for a few years because of the charge I was on, inciting mutiny, treasonous conduct. So, I mean, I could see myself being in prison for quite a few years. You know, it was a case of... that was an episode that was past that, organising this union. Couldn't see myself getting off.
It's just that it sounds a bit odd to me, you saying that, because I would have thought that would be the obvious thing to be talking about, since that was what you'd actually been trying to do. I would have thought if you were talking to people, you know, just ordinary seamen, about politics, it would have been quite obvious to talk about that. So, any particular reason why you...
No, I mean, you were only with them 10 minutes a day. I'd argued with them to get organised to do what I was doing, you know, to start fighting for the rights. But I was also trying to win converts to communism. That was... But you didn't have much chance to talk to people. 20 minutes a day, you know. And you're having to smoke in between and all that.
Do you think people thought that... Maybe admired you for what you'd done, but thought it was a bit foolhardy?
I don't know. Probably did. Probably thought it was a right nutcase. A handy one to have around, you know, winning all these bloody things for them. Because it wasn't just me that got them, they got them as well. But, they were quite supportive of me. And they had a good laugh, you know, all this whistling and all that. It sort of... I must have been the right laugh. When you think back on it, mind you, I was only 20, what, 21, 22, something like that. You've not much idea at that age. And they must have thought, right, we have a right loony here, you know, really getting up the noses. So it must
were
be...
you really getting up the noses?
Oh, yes, yes, they were really getting up the nose.
They weren't just mildly amused by
it? No. The officers were, it was really getting up the nose. And the warders just couldn't make out what it was all about, you know. They'd have one trying to be friendly with me all the time, you know, hoping to win me confidence and all that. He was always saying, well, I support what you're saying, you know. But you're trying to work your ticket, aren't you? Won't go further than me.
What do you think the Admiral thought of you? How many times did you get to see him?
Well, I don't know, you never knew. I didn't care what they thought about me, you see. I saw them as the other side, see.
But did he strike you as more reasonable? Or?
Yes, it's the... he was... You can see the difference, I mean, and certainly you can in the Navy, between those that have come from the landed gentry, the Willie Whitelaw types, you know, who were... Like paternal, have a paternal. It's like the laird and his sort of estate workers. This thing, you know, he feels a bit responsible. If they're poorly, his wife goes around with a parcel of food and stuff like that. You know, they feel responsible for them. They're lads, sort of thing, you know. And the landed gentry still have this. Still, it seemed to us anyway. And they were more reasonable. They'd listen, whereas the career officer was a different kettle of fish altogether. You know, they'd screw you into the ground and, you know, trample on, not think of like treading on a beetle. But these people were... So, I mean, the crew used to know, you know, you could tell right away who was from what.
Would, when it came to your court-martial, would that be involved an admiral or what's...
Yes, yeah. Word? Yes, it was the same admiral.
You said that you were expecting to get put away for a few years.
Yeah, on that charge.
Were you very worried about this?
No, I mean, I thought...
Did you have any idea what a prison would be like?
No idea at all.
So what happened?
I lived day to day, you know. That was just how I went on. I lived day to day. And things came as they were. Well, you know, if I went to prison, I was still young. So I wasn't too bothered. Well... When you'd read the history of the workers in Russia, I mean, going to prison for a bit, well, so what? I mean, they're in and out of prison like yo-yos, you know. It was expected of you. How could you be a Bolshevik and not go to prison, you know? Because if you were one, they'd soon have you in prison. So, it was just like an apprenticeship, you know. I sort of took it like that sort of thing.
You didn't want to go to prison that reason. You didn't see it.
No, I wasn't looking forward to it, but I wasn't worried about it. I knew I was self-sufficient, you know.
So what happened at the court-martial then?
Well, the Admiral was there, and all these officers, and I was brought up in front, stood up before them. And he explained that this was a court-martial on these charges, and that they would have a different procedure that I'd experienced before. And there would be a prosecuting officer, and there would be a defence officer who was on my side. It was disagreeable, see? So I said, well, I don't want him to represent me. He's one of your class. How can he represent a different class? you know, it's all